Okay, good morning. Tonight is not only Motzei Shabbos, night after Shabbos. Tonight's also Erev Yontif. It's Yontif, it's Chol HaMoed. It's also right before the Yontif of Shvi Yisrael Pesach, we're preparing for the splitting of the Reed Sea. So I wanted to share a few stories that I think highlight this theme of Hashem's salvation and in a dramatic way that coming out of nowhere. There is a Hasidic aphorism that, I'm not sure the source of it, that when Hashem split the Reed Sea, He didn't only split the Reed Sea, but He also brought out then the salvation for every single Jew in every situation was all included within that initial splitting of the Reed Sea. That also includes the salvation for every individual throughout history. It's all included in there. It does say in Chabad Chassidus how the beginning of the coming of Mashiach and the resurrection of the dead started the splitting of the Reed Sea. I want to share a few stories on that theme of Hashem's salvation coming out of nowhere, and the truth is that splitting of the Reed Sea is not just a physical miracle, but as Chassidus teaches, when the sea split and the water split, what also happened was that all the hidden godly energy in the world is comparable to the sea. Just like in the sea, there is a lot of things, a lot of creatures in the sea, but they're submerged in water. Therefore, we can't view them, but they're there. They're hidden. And so, to the godly energy within creation, the godly energy within every single thing in the world, it's analogous to the sea in the sense that we cannot see it. And just like this is true in the world, so too is this true in each of us individually. Each of us individually has inner koiches pnimim, inner strength that God gave us. And we can go by 20, 30 years and not even be aware of who we really are as Jews and what our strength really is. I want to share a few stories on that theme. First is about Rabbi Hendel Lieberman. Rabbi Hendel Lieberman was the brother of the famous legendary Hasidic mentor, Mendel Futafas, who did hard time in the Soviet Union for his activities in spreading Judaism and helping Jews in Russia. So his brother, Reb Hendel, he had to take a different name for whatever reason, but he was a brother of Mendel Futafas, and he took the name Lieberman. So Reb Hendel Lieberman was a very gifted artist, and he would travel to different shows to show his artwork. And Rebbe once told him, he was going to a certain show, I don't remember what city it was in, the Rebbe wanted him to not go to the regular hotel that the religious crowd would usually frequent because it had kosher food, but to go to another hotel near that hotel. That's what Rebbe instructed him. Don't go to the regular hotel, go to another hotel close by. So he comes to this show and he puts out his artwork, and his artwork is really unique. It's I can't really share... describe his great artwork, but he with his artwork, he was able to convey a lot of the energy in the Yiddish shtetlach, in the Yiddish small towns, and the kind of life that they had then. And so he comes to this art show, and as Rebbe instructed, he stayed in this other hotel. And his artwork made a big impression on everyone. They weren't used to this picture that he portrayed of the shtetl, of the nostalgic memories that people had looking at his artwork. It made quite an impression. Anyways, one day he's in his hotel room, there's a knock on his hotel room, and this guy knocks on the door, and this guy doesn't look Jewish at all. He asks Reb Hendel if he could borrow his talis and his tefillin. Sure, he borrows his talis and tefillin. And Reb Hendel was surprised because the guy doesn't even look Jewish, but he comes back after a couple of hours. He sees his eyes are red. Doesn't ask him any questions. The show went on for some time, and every day the guy was asking Reb Hendel for his talis and his tefillin. And finally, Reb Hendel sat down with him and spoke to him. And this guy came from a very strong religious background. He was a yeshiva student. And he, for whatever reason, in Soviet Russia, He got swept away with the Soviet philosophy and communist philosophy, and that's how that's what caused him to be detached from his Judaism. And now, just seeing Reb Hendel, and he said, I passed by your room and he heard you daven. Hearing you daven made an impression on me. It made me remember what it was like growing up in this Yiddish town that I grew up in, and the Yontivs and the Shabbos and the Shabbosim. And I wanted to taste that again. I wanted to be part of that again. And I just had to borrow your Talmud Tefillin. And this was the beginning of this person's discovery of his own, how his sea split. And he discovered his inner neshama. Similar stories shared by Rabbi Yisrael Rubin from Albany, New York. Rabbi Rubin was sent by the Rebbe many years ago to Albany, and he once got a phone call. He said that Rabbi Rubin says, he shared that there's three different kinds of miracles. There are miracles that the Rebbe does, which are not really considered the Rebbe's miracles, but he says they're far greater miracles than miracles people talk about. The miracles that the Rebbe does through his outreach, the outreach that the Rebbe encourages through the 10 mitzvah campaigns, through the tefillin campaign, the Shabbos campaign, through encouraging people to do the various mitzvahs, that has such an effect on people, Rabbi Rubin says that it's far greater than seeing the other kinds of miracles where you see the Rebbe giving someone a blessing and they have children and they recover from an illness, but seeing the effect of the mitzvahs that through the Rebbe's campaigns, it's far greater, far more dramatic, far more amazing. He said the one story stands out. He shared three stories on this theme. One story is about the effect of the mitzvah campaign. Another story is about how the Rebbe saw a splitting of the sea in a city. And the third story is about how the Rebbe saw within the rabbi who was meant to be sharing the Torah and sharing the mitzvahs, and he has a crisis, and the Rebbe allows the shliach, the rabbi, to experience his own splitting of the Reed Sea within himself. So here are the three stories. First is about this guy calls up Rabbi Rubin, tells him that is a relative of his who got attracted to this cult. And this cult was not so far away from Albany, and therefore he asked Rabbi Rubin if he could travel and visit his relative in this cult. So Rabbi Rubin traveled there. He went in a car, and it was a couple of hours away. It was in the middle of a forest. There was some kind of a commune, and it was really like it was shell-shocked, like to see people living the way they were with this blind faith in this guru. And he managed to locate in this cult the boy that he had tried, that he was sent to or tried to reach out to, but the boy basically blew him off. And the boy, he wasted his time. He spoke to the boy for a long time, but the boy wasn't interested in leaving the cult. Parenthetically, I think I shared this before, Rabbi Shia Hecht once shared that when trying to speak to a Jew who's been seduced by a cult, it's important to speak a lot, to repeat the same things again and again. Because, the Rebbe said, when you speak a lot, you say the same things again and again, eventually your words will come from the heart. And Rabbeinu Tam writes in Sefer HaYashar, words that come from the heart enter the heart. And therefore, it's important to repeat again and again the same things when you're trying to help someone who has been brainwashed by a cult. Anyways, Rabbi Rubin feels he's wasted his time. He's about to go back to his car and leave and, you know, waste the time. Rabbi, then this boy tells Rabbi Rubin, you know, before you go, he tells him with a smirk, you might want to try to speak to our guru. Our guru was Jewish too. Everyone knows he was originally a Jew. You may want to talk to him. So Rabbi Rubin said, I'll do that. And they had a certain system in this cult of who can speak to the guru and when, but he found out where the guru was. He knocks on his door and he goes straight to talk to the guru. One of the characteristics that this guru had was everyone was so blindly following him. But what he actually did, his system was, he was with silence. He led with silence. He wouldn't speak. Everyone listened to him, but he would barely talk. Rabbi Rubin sits down with his guru, not saying a word. Rabbi Reuben begins to talk. He's talking for 2 hours, and the guy doesn't even wink at him, doesn't bat an eyelash, doesn't no effect whatsoever. Rabbi Reuben's about to leave, and he actually walks out of the door, and then he says to himself, you know what? The Rebbe said the main thing is action. This guy is Jewish. I'm going to go put on tefillin with him. And he goes back to the guru, and he lifts up his sleeve, and he puts on tefillin with him. And the guru doesn't protest. He puts on the shaliyah, the hand tefillin. He's about to put on the head tefillin, and the guru breaks down, and he starts crying. This guy also had a similar upbringing to this gentleman in the first story of Rabbi Lieberman, and he was really, really touched by the putting on tefillin. Today, Rabbi Reuben says, I won't tell you his name, but you would recognize his name because he is very active in teaching Jewish philosophy and Hasidus in a large Jewish community. I don't want to embarrass him, Rabbi Reuben says, therefore I'm not going to share his name, but he is the guru himself became, rediscovered his Judaism, and he has his own Kriyas Yamsuf, his own splitting of the sea within himself. But here's a second story about the splitting of the sea in a city. Rabbi Reuben said that he once got a sudden instruction from the Rebbe to build a mikveh in Troy, New York. Troy is not so far away from Albany, but in Troy, there weren't that very many young people who lived there, certainly not religious people. And the Rebbe gave him this instruction to build a mikveh in the city. Of course, the Rebbe says that they went with faith to do this, but they couldn't understand why would the Rebbe want to build a mikveh here when it didn't seem that anyone there would be using it. I did share a few months ago, if you remember, how the Rebbe said to build a mikveh in Lebanon, story into itself, just for one person. So building a mikveh for one person is certainly important, but this was unusual. The Rebbe was actively instructing this rabbi, we need to build a mikveh in Troy. So a short while after the mikveh was built, the American government was looking for a city to build a similar to Silicon Valley here in California. They're looking for another city to build something similar, a computer city. And they decided to use Troy, New York, of all places, to be that city. And so many, many couples moved to that city. When they moved there, they found that they had already a kosher mikveh before they arrived in the city. That was already there for them. And subsequent to that, Rabbi Reuben arranged that a new Chabad emissary should move to Troy, New York. But that's a story about a city having a splitting of the Reed Sea, discovering what was there in the city that wasn't there, but that no one knew about before. I'm going to share with you the third story, which I find very personally, very meaningful personally. Rabbi Reuben said he was having a very hard time. In Albany, there's a very strong presence of conservative and reform, and Rabbi Reuben was having a very hard time sharing Torah and mitzvahs because of that and because of other financial challenges he was having. And he really was thinking of where in the world do we go from here? Like, how can we possibly continue and develop when I have so many challenges? And he said, among Hasidim, there are many Hasidim who get many letters from the Rebbe of encouragement, but he never merited, he never had those kind of letters from the Rebbe. But as he was going through this personal crisis within himself, he suddenly got a letter from the Rebbe. And the letter of the Rebbe had a message in the which was very unusual. The Rebbe said, you have to pay attention to the time that we're in right now. The Rebbe sent this letter between Parshas Vayetze and Parshas Vayishlach. The Rebbe said, you have to look at the difference that happened to Yaakov between Parshas Vayetze and Parshas Vayishlach. In Parshas Vayetze, Yaakov comes penniless to his father-in-law, future father-in-law, Lavan. He has nothing. He's there without anything. And all of a sudden, in Parshas Vayishlach, where he is about to meet his brother Esav, he in his prayers, he talks about how I crossed the sea with nothing. But then he said, Hashem has blessed me with two camps. I came with nothing, but all of a sudden, now I have such abundance. I have so much. So the Rebbe said a few different things in how Yaakov's life changed between Parshas Vayitzi and Parshas Vayishlach, and it was emphasizing how Hashem's salvation comes very, very quickly. From Parshas Vayitzi to Parshas Vayishlach, there's already this dramatic change in Yaakov's life. He's married, and he has a family, and he's very, very wealthy, and all this happens between Parshas Vayitzi. In 1 week, we read in the Torah, this great change happens to Yaakov. So Rabbi Rubin said, personally, he thinks that the Rebbe was alluding to detailed events that happened in his own life, and how he saw every letter of the Rebbe's, every word and every letter of the Rebbe in that letter was fulfilled exactly to the T, in this dramatic change in his own life when he was going through this crisis. One more story before I let you guys go. Rabbi Yitzchak Hazan, Rebbe's emissary to Rome, he shared that in Rome, there was a prominent rabbi, the chief rabbi of Rome. His name was Rabbi Yo Taub. And Rabbi Yo Taub always shared this story about himself, similar to the story that Rabbi Reuben shared. Rabbi Yo Taub was leading his community for a long time, chief rabbi, but it was a very great challenge to his leadership. The president of the community in Rome wanted to make various changes to the synagogues. The president wanted the synagogues to look more like Lahavda, like the churches. They should have an organ, they should have a microphone to use on Shabbos, as many other communities, unfortunately, were challenged as years went on, that they wanted to look, they wanted the Jewish community, the president, the board, wanted various shuls to change, to look more like the churches and to have more modern things that violate Jewish law. So this is what this president of the community wanted to do. And Rabbi Taub was convinced that the right response was for him to completely vacate his post. How can he consider himself a rabbi of a community which has a microphone on Shabbos, which has an organ, which is against halacha? So he was going to, he sat down and he wrote down his letter of resignation of why he can no longer continue leading the community in Rome. As he's sitting there, he's spending hours writing this letter. These two young men are in the lobby by his secretary, asking to speak to him. Okay, let them come in. These two young men say to him like this: yesterday we visited the Lubavitcher Rebbe, and the Rebbe asked us to come to visit you and to tell you that that your father is praying for you from the world of truth. Your father is a guter better. He is beseeching on your behalf in the world of truth. And all the issues that seem to be like impossible will shortly, in a week or two, will all turn around. So it's important that you stay in your position. Don't leave your position, because all the things you're worried about, very quickly, very swiftly, they'll all be transformed for good and don't have to worry about anything. So dutifully, these men, they said their message and they left, and he's there, sitting there with his letter, and he decides, no, he realized this wasn't an accident. He took the letter and he tore up the letter, and he kept in that synagogue for the next 2 weeks, and sure enough, as Rebbe said, all of the whole storm, the whole tumult was dissipated. What happened was, for whatever reason, the head of the community, the president of the community, one who was calling all of this turmoil, he had to temporarily vacate his position. And when he did, so then this whole rebellion, if you will, immediately dissipated. So, bottom line is that when a Jew like Nachshon stands up and decides that he's going to walk in the way of Hashem, the sea splits. As the story of Rabbi Taub, where he went forward and not knowing how things were going to work out, but you know, when absolute faith, Moshe Rabbeinu told Nachshon, told the Jewish people, go forward towards Mount Sinai, don't worry about the sea. And Nachshon went into the water, and the water reached his nostrils, and all of a sudden, the water split. In a similar way, Rabbi Taub did the same thing. Rebbe said, go further, and the sea split. Rabbi Reuben did the same thing. He went further, and he got the instruction from the Rebbe, don't worry, it's between Vayetze and Vayishach. Hashem's salvation comes very quickly. In a similar way, when any Jew decides that he wants to follow the way of Hashem, he has to realize that Hashem created the obstacle. And the only purpose of the obstacle is only in order that we should split the sea within ourselves and reveal our own faith in Hashem. And when we reveal the faith we have in Hashem and our devotion to Hashem, that causes the world, that causes the challenge itself to be, to see the godliness, which is in the challenge itself. The challenge itself looks like it's such a dark thing, such an impossible thing. But when you reveal within yourself your faith in Hashem, your devotion to Hashem, that causes that the darkness, which is in the challenge that you're experiencing, that darkness itself is transformed and the truth of Hashem is revealed. Just like in the story of the splitting of the Red Sea and in many other stories each of us know personally in ourselves, that when we held on to our guns, we held on to the truth. As Rebbe Rashab once remarked, before the truth, everything becomes obsolete. Everything comes obsolete before the truth. So bottom line is, we need to see the splitting of the Red Sea for all the Jewish people, and we need to see the coming of Mashiach, when again, as the Torah says, Hashem will again split the river, as the Torah says, and which again means that Hashem will reveal the godliness which is within creation, the godliness which is within every Jew. And we celebrate this Yontev, Shir Shal Pesach, in Yerushalayim with Mashiach Tzidkenu, because if you go right tonight with Mashiach to Eretz Yisrael, to Yerushalayim, all of our people, and freedom from all the hostages, and the resurrection of the dead, we should experience this immediately. B'karei Mamish, Agut Moed, Nefreilich Yontev. Any questions or comments? Or criticism.
Why criticism?
All right, no criticism, my wife says. All right. Good morning, David. Good morning, Baruch. Good morning, Beryl.
Okay, I had a question.
Yeah.
Oh, the lulav from Simchat Torah, is that lulav? Do some communities use that in some aspect for Passover?
Some burn it with the chametz. Some burn it with the chametz.
Oh, okay, okay. I just
didn't
know what the relation was.
All right.
Thank you.
No problem. Okay. Good morning, Baruch. Good morning, Pliny Almeni. Good morning, Chayasara. And good morning, Ben Chag. Good morning, Abba. Good morning, David. Good Rab David. Good morning, Ben Achar. Good morning, Yehuda. Good morning, Ben Chayel. Okay.
Is our seventh day of Pesach considered just like a regular day?
Yeah. What do you mean? It's just an anniversary of splitting the Red Sea. All the light and revelation Hashem brought to the world then is revealed again tomorrow night. The previous Shabbos said that tomorrow night is called the Rosh Hashanah for Mesiras Nefesh. It's Rosh Hashanah when Hashem gives us the power to give our lives to Hashem throughout the whole year. In fact, it's a Chabad custom tomorrow night to stay up all night to study Chassidus the entire night tomorrow night. It's a very special night.
No, I mean, we have an extra day here in Chutz Laaretz. We have 8 days.
Right.
So is the eighth day considered the Shvi'i Shel Pesach?
So the eighth day of Pesach is actually even more special. The eighth day of Pesach, although it seems like the last day, it seems like it's just an extra day in the outside of Israel. The truth is, the eighth day of Pesach is connected to the light of Mashiach. The seventh day of Pesach is more connected to the splitting of the Red Sea. But the eighth day of Pesach is with the light of Mashiach, and that's why we have a custom that the Baal Shem Tov established to have matzah and wine last day of Pesach, and to make the meal of Mashiach, to bring the light of Mashiach into us, and the faith of Mashiach into us, and to make it happen.
Which day do we read all the prophecies? On the 7th or the 8th?
On the 8th day of Pesach, we have the Haftorah about the coming of Mashiach.
Mm-hmm.
All right. A good night.